Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Poetry with Flavor. This is your host, Miss Lucy. Two rules. One, respect your elders, meaning me. And two, don't forget what your mama told you. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything. Before I begin with the first poem, I wanted to say to those of you who are tuned in and listening that feel free to make a comment or ask questions. Let me know who you are and where you're from. I'd like to know who my audience is. Okay. This week, I met two very outstanding young black men, and I had, not in the same place, but I had conversations with them, and so my first two poems are to these two gentlemen. The first one is to Mr., I call him Mr. Ed. I don't know his last name, but he's a wonderful gentleman. He's actually my teller at the Bank of America. So I want to do this poem for him, Harry's Afro Hut. And Harry's Afro Hut was a barber shop in Baltimore, Maryland, that was owned by Mr. Willie Harry, but during the years that it was in operation, I would say a large portion of the barbers in the city of Maryland got their training at Harry's Afro Hut. Okay. Harry's Afro Hut in Baltimore, where the brothers can be brothers. No shooting and button heads. Brothers be talking, sharing, and bonding instead. Shoring up their manhood against the bullshit outside the door that for lesser men would kill the life spirit inside. From miles around and across the state, they came in droves to escape the daily emasculation of whitey's hate. At Harry's, the facade comes off like the brothers' draws on a red-hot date. The transition is as smooth as the geometrical lines and fades they be getting. Mayors, doctors, Poe and Avers brothers, uneducated and intellectuals, be sitting side by side, conversing, righting the wrongs of a world that would consume them. And all the while, the brothers be role modeling for the little bros that are waiting to have their due styled sleek and proud and cool as they watch and listen to the incomparable logic and strength of the black man. Not seen nor heard on television because of society's fear of revealing truth that would weaken the man's unholy grasp on the world if all were told. So I prayed that Harry's Afro Hut, like the pyramids, stands forever with the barbers shadowing tall as pharaohs, images of intellect, strength, and beauty that cannot be wrenched from the minds of generations to come. That's Harry's Afro Hut, where brothers come out fades tall and chests high, and the revolution continues. Well, that was for Mr. Ed. Mr. Ed, I hope you are tuned in. If not, I'm going to be upset. Okay. The other young man that impressed me, these two young men, both professional, both just what they should be, awesome young men. Well, the second young man, his name is Josh. I met him at the CQ Credit Union because I had to have something notarized, and he notarized it for me and found out that he is a 2013 graduate of Livingstone College, my alma mater. So that just brought, I was just tickled to meet him, and even though not knowing him, knowing that he went to my school and he's doing so well. So before I left, I went to the car and I got him a copy of the poem, Rites of Passage, which I wrote for my class, 50-year class reunion, class of 1969, and gave it to him. So I'm going to read it. I hope he's tuned in. Saturday night at Gohler Hall, from floor to floor and to the top of every ceiling, sulfur aid and tar fumes float throughout the building, with hot plates burning red hot and straightening combs smoking, telling the secret of short hair growing long and silky. Tops of Dixie peach pomade heat on the hot plate to melt the grease into oil, hair being pulled to the front to hide a face scarred with beauty burns from a hot comb too close to the skin. As ladies of Livingstone press hair and dress to impress, to hopefully attract the gentlemen tonight. Short and tall girls, petite and voluptuous girls, half naked, half clad, bird baths and showers fully occupied. Water turning freezing cold, skins of black, brown, and gold, cinnamons, reds, mocha chocolate, and butterscotch. The ritual was in full swing, getting ready for the dance in the Trent Gym, when the lights on the second floor East Hall started blinking in every room, and a chorus of voices reaches a crescendo, praying, God, don't let the electricity go out until I finish busting those naps in the kitchen. The ladies were timid souls entering Trent Gym, for in order to get into the dance, there were several gauntlets to pass. The first was the inspection by the fellows on campus who had arrived early, just to line up on either side of the entrance to give the testosterone-fueled catcalls of approval or disapproval. That took courage to pass. The second gauntlet was more terrifying. More terrifying. Glasses. As the bleachers in the gym were filled with our chaperones, our professors, and the dean of women, who looked upon you as their charge and became our surrogate parents. And my, how they took that role seriously. This was a Christian church school with high moral standards. They kept a tight rein on youthful hormones and youthful transgressions all week long, as evidenced by Vespers every Wednesday evening, required Bible study class, church services in Varick Auditorium, and then there were the Coleman rules of conduct for each student. No hand-holding, ladies couldn't wear pants, gentlemen not allowed to sit straddle-legged on the benches under thy maples and thy oaks. Sign in and sign out wherever you go. Get permission to ride in a car. Dorm curfews. And let's not forget the ton of saltpeter floating in our drinks with each meal. On to the dance at Trent Gym. As the ladies entered the dance, one last check of the outfits. Not too short, not too tight. Girdle holding the jiggle still, and definitely no cleavage showing. They were ever mindful of how they danced. No uncultivated gyrations of the hips. not too close to your partner, and not too wild. While secretly praying, our chaperones would tire before too long and leave before the last dance, which, of course, was always a slow, slow dance, like to the sounds of Percy Sledge singing, "When a Man Loves a Woman." When our chaperones did retire, and for certain had exited the building, the dance turned up a notch as the pounding dance steps released the dust from between the wood planks of the floor and covered our shoes and continued to rise and create a halo of dust above our heads. If you were dancing on the last record, it usually meant that you would be escorted back to the dorm, where amid the lush hedges in front of Gohler Hall, you would create a room of privacy as the evening kiss would gently press you up against the hedges, and the branches with their leafy tips would wrap around you and your man, and you become camouflaged, incognito, wearing leaves in your hair and cloaked in the color green, secluded in your very own kissing booth, oblivious to all around you. Never mind that just inches away to your left and to your right were other couples under cover of the ivy and the oaks. Never mind that sisters without a mister were hanging out the dorm windows overhead, watching, signifying, masking their jealousy under the pretense of laughter. It's minutes before curfew, and a figure appears under the porch lights at the entry to Gohler Hall. Mrs. Alcestes Coleman. Dean of Women steps out and without a word looks to her left and looks to her right, and lips unlock and hands unclasp and drop to their sides, and personal spaces returned as the hedges empty out. Mrs. Coleman pruned and cleaned those hedges like a professional landscaper. The ladies head to their dorm rooms to grab their pillows tight, reliving the goodnight kiss. The gentlemen head over to Frankie's Chicken Shack for some barbecue dipped chicken and share bragging rights. It's curfew time. Gotta get ready for church in the morning. So a shout out to Josh. I hope you are tuned in, and I hope you enjoyed that about Livingstone. Oh, speaking of Livingstone, on the news today, I was so glad to hear they got, I think, over $7 million to, I don't know whether it's just for dormitories, but they're getting new buildings because a few months back they had on the news that they even showed some of the girls from Gohler Hall having to carry their laundry to another building, water pipes were bursting, and just a lot of things going wrong with the building. But looks like it's going to be remedied, thank goodness. $7 million, it was just announced today, so I'm glad to hear that. This is for my Miss Lena, who was my roommate at Livingstone College, and she's not feeling well. She's under the weather, and I just wanted to read this poem, which I've read it before, but it's about the resiliency, mythical resiliency that we have as Black women, how we overcome, and I just wanted to read this for her. Rise, Sally, rise is the title. Rise, Sally, rise. Wipe your weeping eyes. Put your hands on your hips and let your backbone slip. Turn to the east and turn to the west and turn to the one that you love the best. Life giver, builder of a nation, nurturer of a people, preserver of a history, transmitter of a culture, bridge over troubled waters. Black woman says it all. Black woman stands tall. Rise, Sally, rise. Survivor of spirit death and rape and the destruction of her family, victimized by race, class, and gender, her beauty denied and distorted into a midnight black nappy head, liver lip, and ham hock hip, cornbread thighs mammoth, whose breast resembles the mammary glands and udders of a cow. Rise, Sally, rise. Her femininity called into question. Wench, bitch, whore, half man, never called lady, even though the title she wears is queen. Auntie, Mammy, first name, Sapphire, Jezebel, never called her God-given name. Black woman calls upon her sisters for affirmation and a safe haven where she can be disarmed and not threatened. Sisters provide a place of love, connection, spirituality, and uplift. Rise, Sally, rise. Some would say you are a contradiction, strong in mind and spirit, gentle, sassy, powerful, protective, disciplined, enterprising, a warrior woman wrapped in sweet brown sugar, molasses and caramel, nurturing and loving, soft and warm, and in that sweet, easy manner, you rock your child to sleep with, rise, Sally, rise. Wipe your weeping eyes. Put your hands on your hip and let your backbone slip, ensuring the ties that bind us together, instilling the spirit until day is done. Black woman says it all. Black woman stands tall. Rise, Sally, rise.
That's beautiful, Lucy.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Oh, I got my card today. Thank you, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, you're welcome. That's beautiful, that's beautiful.
I'd like to get a copy and I'll frame it for Miss Lena.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, you know, I'm always watching the news and stuff. Something came up today, and it's not just for old folks, it's for any age. One of the fastest rising crimes is people stealing from mailboxes.
Yeah.
Not just at your front door, but a lot of these places now have a special place where they have everybody's mailboxes together. Mm-hmm. And people mm-hmm. are robbing them. And so I just wanted to say, please take note of that. Don't leave your mail in those kinds of mailboxes overnight. You know, nighttime's a time you can get covered up, even though the crimes are taking place day and night. But you have to do what you can to prevent that from happening to you. They just, I forgot the man's name, the USPS postal worker employee just got a year and 6 months in federal prison. He just sentenced today. Because he stole $40,000 of checks and money order stuff out of mail on his route. I mean, who can you trust today? Between
right,
the criminals
now that's your
and route. Then he got, mm-hmm. And he stole the $43,000 worth of checks and money. And they said he also sold the information or whatever on the dark web. So I don't know what that means, but I guess criminal web or whatever. And so what he's done has repercussions that may continue trouble for people, you know,
yeah.
If their information has been sold, you know. And what they do is they take those checks, and I don't know what they use, but they wash them. That's what they call it, wash the checks, and then they can put any name they want on it and cash the check. But so you're not safe anywhere. I mean, he's a postal employee. He did that. And then so just be careful if you have those mailboxes that are an essential place for your community. Please get your mail every day. Don't say, oh, I'll go get it tomorrow. No, go get your mail and pray for the best. We're living in a very chaotic time.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. And what else did I see on the news that I wanted to share? I don't know my... You all know I say this a million times. My mind has a mind of its own. So,
I don't know whether you saw it last week where the teacher here in Charlotte, Meg, how she was reprimanding that little boy. A lot of people, I may not agree with everything that she did, but I understand she had enough. I don't know whether you saw it or not. She had enough.
On TV, yeah.
She had enough.
Hey, I'm on her side.
Oh, I'm on her side,
I'm on
too.
Her side.
And then the father made the comment that, because she said the little boy was trying to fight a little girl, and you could tell this is not the first time that he's done that. And the father made the comment that his son wouldn't fight anybody. Now, you know, a parent could never make a comment like that about his or her child.
Yeah.
Your child will fight if that child is pushed hard enough, any child.
Yeah.
But he's going to
I'm sorry to interrupt. Not only that, it used to be, okay, y'all, I'm having a senior moment, and these words aren't coming to me, but I don't know what the word is, but I don't know, is it called a paradigm? I don't know. It used to be... God, parents, and it's a list that goes down who we listen to, and
that's
has long changed. God not even on the list, okay?
Seriously.
Parents are at the bottom of the list.
Right.
At the top of the list is technology, and underneath of that are your crazy friends.
That's
so,
right.
Teachers have, and this is at least two decades, that teachers, well, we've always had that word teacher takes in a lot of roles that you do. But even more so nowadays, you got to be mother, father, nurse, psychiatrist, therapist, you know, referee.
Everything.
So
everything.
Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, go ahead.
Uncomfortable truths is that we try to raise our kids well, but when they're out of our sight, we can't say, oh, my child never do that.
That's right. That's why I said that father making a statement, his son wouldn't fight anybody.
Yeah.
You don't know what your own child would do when that child is not in your presence.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And our generation might be able to say that, but today's generations can't say that. The kids are overstimulated. All the rules that we knew, grew up with, are gone.
That's
you know, it's just a really scary time, you know. And I'll tell you another thing: the school curriculum has got to change. And I'm not just talking about critical race. I'm talking about the whole teaching system needs to change and what they're teaching. And these and part of the that's a whole. Let me get off of that. I don't teach anymore. So, but but it's a lot to it. And if somebody wanted to pay me $1 million to go back to teaching, I would give it up. I would refuse it.
Well, Lucy, that's why your poetry, I think, is so important to us, because it reminds us of the good old days.
Yeah.
We're old enough to say that now.
I remember the good old days.
Right.
Yeah.
The black culture was important. It meant something. It was so important.
Just so important. Yeah. It's still important. We've got to get back to it.
That's right. We left it behind, like we should never have left it. Yeah.
We should never have fallen for
never.
Integration.
Right.
Our neighborhoods would still be intact.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, let me see. This Black History Month, okay. I don't see too much on TV about Black History Month the way it used to be. I guess they're trying to erase that too, but it had never happened. But anyway, in honor of Black History Month, and I've read this to you before too, but I'm going to do it again. It's called Midnight in the Daylight, and I wrote it for Sterling Brown, who was an author, poet, writer. I met him in the 70s in Washington, D.C., and he told me to observe and write. And so that's always stayed with me, observe and write. You know who else said that to me, Ann? Dr.
Who?
Smith.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In fact, I forgot all about it. She sent me a letter, and she said, "You really know your people." But anyway, okay. This is Midnight in the Daylight, and I wrote it for Sterling Brown. And they came, Sterling, not by ones, not by twos, not by tens, but by the hundreds, strong, united, committed, saying we are, we can, we will reclaim our wives, our sons and daughters, our families, our neighborhoods, our friends, from the east, from the south, from the north and west, from the motherland of Africa and Canada, Caribbean, West Indies, and all the rest, by car, by bus, by train, by plane, like a caravan in the desert, spying the oasis ahead, which will quench the thirst, give hope and strength to master and change our destiny. They came, Sterling, not by ones, not by twos, not by tens, but by the thousands, Christian, Muslims, non-believers alike, Afros, naturals, dreads, soft sheen curls, fades, goatees, mustaches, and beards, cuffies, guys, caps, and other covered heads, old men, young men, tots, teens, young adults, and midlifers, and seniors. They were strutting their stuff. They were blue collars and white collars and no collars at all, and walking tall, walking tall. They were suited and booted, leather loafers and tennis shoes, with kente cloth accents competing with the rays of the sun as their presence shouted, the lynching stopped today. Today, stop today. They came, Sterling, not by ones, not by twos, not by tens, but by the millions. Their drums were sounded and their pulsating call was answered. The men stood tall as redwood trees. What a sight for my black soul. Like the moon eclipsing the sun, It was midnight in the daylight, a black and beautiful sight. They came, Sterling, they came. They came amid threats of losing a day's pay, of reprimands on the job, of demotions and complete separation from employment, of being labeled militant, and even loss of life. They came anyway, big, black, and bad. They came and they conquered the fear and dispelled the myth of their powerlessness, seizing their rightful place on this earth. They came, Sterling, by the hundreds, by the thousands, by the millions, by the millions, by the millions. That was the Million Man March, October 16, 1995.
That's beautiful. Okay. That's beautiful.
You know, there I've heard it at least twice, but I haven't read anything on it. That there were some talk about another march like that, but I don't agree with it. It's too dangerous.
Yeah.
It's too dangerous an environment, you know, for that to take place, in my opinion, you know.
I agree with you. A crowd like that, and with all the weapons that people have now, somebody's going to have a sick mind and take advantage of it.
That could turn into a slaughter.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what
it could. Yeah, I agree. Okay. Let's see. I'm flipping pages. Let me do this. Ode to Chair Darfur. This is one from I have a series of poems that have to do with aging that I'm still adding to. But anyway, Ode to Chair Dancing. Smooth feet and slender ankles, once adorned by a gold ankle bracelet and pointed-toe spiked heel shoes that executed the fanciest of footsteps to the latest dance craze. And never tired. Now move a little slower. Spread beyond recognition into crepe-soled lace-ups that are easy on the corns and bunions, and keep each step comfortable and sure. But the body remembers the beat, loves the rhythm, and still moves to music as shoulders, arms, head, and neck create new steps as she sits in her chair by the radio. Okay. This is another that has to do with aging, called Tomorrow Has Come. Gravity pull, sagging breasts. Body needs a lot of rest. Cotton underwear, plain white, no dare, no one to look anymore, no one to care. Uneven, gray, and wiry tresses, getting used to longer dresses. Mustache on upper lip, no more perfect fingernail tips. Toothless grin and hairs on the chin. I sit for hours, unable to get started, while tomorrow arrived.
Oh, my, that is something. So much truth.
You see, you know, every time some music comes on that I like, and I think about what I just read, and I think about how I used to laugh at my mother and father when they would try to dance, when they, you know, being the parent, and now I'm there, you know,
Oh, yes.
Okay. Let's see. Are you all tired of hearing the same things over and over?
Oh, absolutely not. In fact, you know, I have my wonderful disc of the 25 offerings, and from time to time, I just play them and enjoy them as much as I did the first time.
Oh, thank you, Miss Lee. This one is. Okay. Let me do the bar. I haven't read this in a while, but this, I have so many projects, and I don't know why these projects are coming to my mind to do when I feel like time is moving so fast, I'll never get it completed, you know. But it was my desire to start writing what they call flash fiction, which is a full story, but not using a lot of words. A flash fiction can be 50 words to 3,000 words. How do I describe it? I don't describe things well, but flash fiction meaning, you know, short and to the point, really, but using as few words as possible, but having a full story is what it is. Okay. And I started it when I wrote this piece called The Barn, but I never got any further with writing other pieces. I would like to do that. Okay. It was a small, nondescript farm that set about a quarter of a mile from the main road. You had to park on the side of the road and walk up a hill on a dirt path to access the house. There was a house, a barn, an outhouse, a small chicken coop with about 12 chickens, and two roosters, a spring water well, a cow, and a mule. Small plots of corn, beans, potatoes, and tobacco dotted the farm. If you didn't know it was there, it would go unnoticed. But it seems lots of people from around the county knew where it was. They would come to the farm, bringing their family members to her as if she were a licensed medical doctor. If they had rashes or coughs or some other mystery illness, they headed straight to her farm. They called her a healer, a root doctor. She would take them down the muddy path, strewn with rocks that zigzag downhill, away from the back of the house. The path led to a weathered barn where they cured the tobacco leaves. The air was thick with the aromatic scent of tobacco. Only she and the person that was ill would enter through the large 6-plank-wide door of the barn. The family member would wait outside, taking a seat on one of several wooden stools and crates alongside the barn. Sometimes the wait was short. Sometimes the wait was long. Some would try to peer in through the gaps in the slats of the wood frame building to no avail. Their view was obstructed by the hanging tobacco leaves. As well, any sound in the barn was muffled by the denseness of the hundreds of leaves. When she emerged from the barn, the person was whole again, healed of whatever the infirmity was or would be in 2 or 3 days. Don't tell me I don't have a second page. I don't have a second page. Oh, my goodness. Hold on.
Oh, please,
that
do,
is
because
terrible.
Those are my, I worked in tobacco.
Was tobacco sticky?
Oh, yes, it's sticky, right. And it would be a black tar-like thing that would come on your hand. I mean, you could wash it off, but it would be black. That's the way we made our money growing up, to buy school clothes and stuff. We worked in tobacco. We were glad to work to make that money.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here, I think, look, I don't have glasses on. I don't know what I'm doing. You all, hold on a minute. Okay, when she emerged from the barn, I think this is the second. Okay. Okay, it's just a couple sentences. When she emerged from the barn, the person was whole again, healed of whatever infirmity was or would be in 2 or 3 days. They said she could work them roots. They said she could fix or undo anything. Whatever mystical, magical, godly or ungodly thing my ex-mother-in-law did, she did it well because the people kept coming. I had my suspicions that she took my marriage into that barn and undid it with her mojo. Boy, that's a big silence.
Mother-in-law sounds powerful.
Oh, don't get me started. If you got a good one, count your blessings. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
You know, and there's another piece I wrote about that character. I'll just say character. The one I did about the apron strings, and nobody seemed to get it, but... Where is it? Let me see. Here it is. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Blood Ties and Guilt Trips is the title. And I read this before, but nobody seemed to understand it. And what it has to do with is the relationship of the son to the mother that can, I'll just say, go off the rails, okay? Blood Ties and Guilt Trips. She camouflaged her cunning ways, disguised in her cotton ruffles, keeping them hidden in starched white pockets filled with larger measures of Lord willing and woe is me. As expertly as she kneaded and twisted dough into perfectly knotted bread, she wrapped him up in guilt trips of blood ties, like the necktie he wore, made out of her apron strings.
Hmm.
Anybody get it?
Oh, yeah. I see it now. I see it.
Oh.
Okay.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. What time is it, somebody?
7:43.
Okay.
I have the same time.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I'm just flipping a little bit of pages again. Okay. Once upon a time. And it's again, it's about aging. And this actually took place with myself, my aunt, my grandmother, sitting on my grandmother's porch. And we're out there, you know, just having a conversation. And this was a known young lady in the neighborhood. Once upon a time. Like moths to a flame and flies to honey, men circled around her wherever she went. Reason for the attraction: too tight and too short dresses that showed all of her private business. The hoeish shoes she wears, the red ones, 5 inches high, made her calf muscles sit up and butt stick out, and her breast point east and west. Grandma would call her a heifer. And Auntie would chime in with Huzzy. Me, I just excuse myself and go to the back of my closet and pull out my old leather miniskirt and my old 1970 favorite pair of leopard print shoes, and I just smile and remember once upon a time. Oh, anybody out there who is very tech savvy, because I am totally, what's lower than a D? Oh, F. I'd get a F in a technology class. I'm throwing this out there that anybody that knows how to put computers together and all that stuff, because I have made up my mind. I'm tired of this little phone, and I'm getting a computer, and I'm getting a microphone, and I'm going to get set up so that I have a desk with a computer and microphone so I can do this right. So if you have that kind of knowledge, let me know.
You know I don't.
I don't either, child. I don't know nothing. Look, the computer has never been anything but a good typewriter for me. That's all I use it for, you know.
Uh-huh.
Here are these next two little poems. They aren't very nice, but one is called Genocide. The other one, let me do Baltimore Directory. And this was written, oh my goodness, 20 years ago. Whatever it could be describing it today. So I hear that Baltimore's really gone down. Called Baltimore Directory. This is me giving directions to somebody to get to my house. When looking for my house, look for the landmarks. Just follow the trail of overflowing trash cans and blue plastic bags flying like balloons or hanging on the branches of leaves. Just past the second pile of eviction trash, the pile with the Beyonce poster, make a right. Go two more blocks and then park by Big Bill's Liquors, right next to the Amen Church of God. If Big Bill's lot is too full, because it usually is, park on the other side of the church in the New York Fried Chicken lot. This is Genocide. And you know, when what was I gonna say? When hip hop started, when the rapping started, do you all remember KRS-One? KRS-One was one of the first groups, and what's the name of the other group? I can't think of it right now. But anyway, they their rapping was positive. It was about uplifting. It was about teaching. And then this it turned into something else so foul and vulgar, you know, that they have today. But anyway, so this is real short. It's called Genocide. Hip-hop's misogynistic, vulgar renderings, loud and repugnant, relentless, filled the airwaves, killing the children.
Killing the children. You're right.
You're right about that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Do I have time for another? I don't know why I can't see the clock on this thing.
You got
my
7:50.
Screen.
I mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's nobody coming behind you, so if you run over, fine.
Mo is coming behind me.
Oh.
Because I got the point. Do you know, let me just say this. Willie, she's in her little pop-up tent. Mo has a pop-up tent, you guys. It's like people get it for their children. Like if they're going to the park or the beach and they can put them in this pop-up tent and it's screened in and you can zip it up in the front so they can't get out. Well, I bought one for Mo because she's old like I am. And I don't know if you know it, but bunny rabbits come out at night. But anyway, it protects her from anything that may come into the yard. Well, anyway, she has turned from being a lap dog, like always in the house with me, to wanting to be in her little castle out on the porch. So when I went to get her, you know, I went to get her, I think it was almost 6:30. And I said, come on, because Mommy's got something to do. Anyway, I was trying to get her in here before the podcast, you know. She actually snapped at me. I can't believe it. I mean, really, I'm in amaze, and my blood pressure going up right now. I'm thinking about it. I can't believe she did that to me because I treated her like a queen. But anyway, so I had to leave her because I had to get my stuff for the podcast. Mm-hmm. So the porch light's on. She can't get out. I can see her. If she wants to get out, she'll bark. But yeah, we're going to have a talk after this. That's all I know. Okay, let me see. I'm trying to find something. I was trying to find something funny. I thought I had more funny stuff, but I don't. Let me see. Oh, I don't think I ever read this one to you, but this is called Black Baby Gifts for the 21st Century. I don't think I finished this. I'm going to share it anyway, okay?
Okay.
It's called Black Baby Gifts for 21st Century. Step and Fetch It videos to learn Zen mannerisms and how to move body in non-threatening manner, how to bow your head, bedtime stories like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, and Little Red Riding Hood bulletproof vest. That's as far as I got. It's not finished. Do you get it? Trying to prepare our children to this world that will not accept them.
That's right.
And you know, and my thoughts were, you know, how they're approached by police and all of that. And my thoughts are bullets flying everywhere, so maybe we need to give them some bulletproof vests for Christmas. You know, that kind of it really. I think I got upset. That's why I didn't finish it. But anyway.
Well, black guys, we played a dozen. And when I look back on that now, that was a way of socializing us to be able to function within the white society. Because when the man came after you, you developed an alternative way of dealing with it rather than combating it, hitting it head on. And now that's why our black males, a lot of them now, are being killed by police officers because they don't know how to manipulate the police. I was born in 45. And I knew how to manipulate white people. And that's what that's integration crap, took that away from us, and we now are like sheep going to slaughter. Come on, come on. So, you know, I tell people that, and people look at me strangely and say, you bullies. No, we were taught, that taught us a lesson. If we, somebody talked about your mama, and you were a group, and you got mad, you're going to have to fight everybody in the group.
Yeah.
So you learn how to respond other than fighting.
So you can survive.
That's right. You can survive. Or you got your butt, you got tired of being beat up.
Yeah. But and you're right about what you said. But the sad fact is that today's world is so magnified, you know, and words have been extended with guns, you know, and integration just killed us, because right now we are in such chaos, and our whole society, not just Black society, the whole American society is just deteriorating and falling apart. And the hate out there is real and is scary. I wish I had $10 billion. I would buy some land out in the ocean somewhere and tell everybody, come on.
Oh, Miss Lucy.
Uh-huh.
I have found quite a few programs on the PBS stations this month, and some of them I have not seen before. They're very good, so check out the PBS stations.
Yeah, I love PBS. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, our history is so vast. It'd take 20, 30 lifetimes to learn it all.
Yes.
Because, I mean, every day you can learn something you never heard before.
Mm-hmm.
That had to do with us, that we created or made or started, you know. It's amazing. It's just amazing. Okay. Well, I'll end it with one little paragraph, not a paragraph, four lines. We've got to free our minds and return to the source of our African beginnings and African thoughts. I'll leave it with that. I thank you all for tuning in.
Oh, my pleasure.
I can't wait to get a microphone and a computer. Okay, I thank you all so very much, and I'll see you next
night.
Good night.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.